Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Hurricane Irene is on the wane. High winds feed a wildfire on Mount Hood. And Germany calls off their hunt for a fugitive cow.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, August 30th, 2011. A new wildfire in the Mount Hood wilderness has grown to at least 1,500 acres, fueled by high winds fanning the flames. A helicopter crew and smoke jumpers were fighting the Dollar Lake complex fire on the north side of the mountain. Firefighters said their greatest challenge continued to be the heavy smoke and steep terrain, which was making it nearly impossible for them to get close enough to build a fire line. Fire officials said all of the smoke also made it hard to tell how big the fire actually is. They estimated the wildfire's first dive in the first 5 hours, it grew by to at least 500 acres. Monday night, it was being described as at least 1,500 acres. Christine Arredondo, a spokeswoman for the Mount Hood National Forest, said, "We don't have a containment line yet. We have very few resources on the fire. It's very steep terrain, and we want to make sure our firefighters are safe." Authorities believe lightning ignited the fire on Sunday, and then high winds helped it suddenly explode in size on Monday.
If I were Christine Arredondo, I would call myself the amazing Arredondo.
Oh, yeah.
Just like FYI, in case you're wondering what I would be called someday, if I were Christine Arredondo, which I'm not.
Your hair is lovely today, by the way.
In a parallel world, though, where I was or were, then I would be the amazing Arredondo.
Your hair is just poking up and doing, like, amazing things today.
Get my Boreanaz on over here, Don.
Yeah, exactly.
It is Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. But did you hear that part where I said I'd be the amazing Arredondo?
I did hear that. I was
if not, I can say it repeatedly. Relentlessly.
I was a little distracted by your hair.
I can end every sentence with that if you'd like.
Really?
What are you drinking?
Monster Rehab.
Okay.
What?
You off the Arnold Palmer?
For today, I needed a little extra boost.
A little extra something, a little pick-me-up.
A little something.
A little spring in your step. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Tuesday, August 30th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, you get your entertainment news, also your science on the march. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
An armed man tried to rob a Subway restaurant at gunpoint in Vancouver Tuesday night, but then fled on a bicycle when the clerk refused to cooperate. The attempted robbery occurred just before 8 p.m. at Subway at 221 Northeast 104th Avenue. The clerk told police a man walked in, displayed a handgun, and demanded money. The clerk removed the money from the cash drawer and then ran into the back room, cash in hand. The suspect then gave up and fled on a bicycle.
So he hadn't even really worked out the first step, which is get the money and run. And then followed by, you know, when you're lambing it and you have to get a fake ID and make yourself a false mustache. He hadn't even really gotten out of the store.
No, he didn't know what to do in the case of the clerk's clever yoink maneuver.
All right. So that was really step A, point two was where it all fell apart for him.
You know, and then, step five, profit.
Goddamn, people are dumb.
The suspect was described as around 36 years old, standing about 5'10 to 6 feet tall, with slender build, wearing a black baseball cap with a white logo, dark sunglasses, a tan short-sleeved button-up collared shirt and dark pants. He was also carrying a white canvas bag with dark handles, no doubt in anticipation of stuffing all of the money he would get from his robbery.
He might really appear to have a slack-jawed look on his face as well, and a sort of a dimness around the eyes.
Vancouver police, with the assistance of a canine unit, canvassed the area, but they did not find him. Police are hoping someone might recognize the man in surveillance photos that have been released to the media and tip off investigators.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes, if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. And you can take it with you if you'd like on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm.
Hurricane Irene is gone. Gone, I tell you. But it will take at least a few weeks for some areas to fully recover from the damage done by the storm. Business owner Ollie Jarvis is one of about 2,500 residents stranded on Hatteras Island, North Carolina, after Irene demolished the island's only road to the mainland. Jarvis, who runs a bait shop, says vicious weather hurts his bottom line.
This is Irene 1.
Yes. Anytime we have a hurricane, it affects our business a week and a half before and at least 2 weeks after.
Ollie Jarvis sounds like good people.
I like the line, by the way, vicious weather hurts his bottom line.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Jarvis says dealing with the aftermath of the hurricane is tough, but he knew he'd have plenty of support.
It's a hardship for us, but I've been here since 1983, and the people of Hatteras Island just always body together.
Ollie Jarvis sounds like he comes from a place where men are men and women are women and children are children, and everybody walks upright and stares toward the future with a gleam in their eye.
Many, many is the time someone has said, go see Ollie Jarvis down to the bait shop.
Not old. It's not Ollie Jarvis. Old Ollie Jarvis.
Old Ollie Jarvis.
Old.
You find him down to the bait shop.
Old one leg Ollie Jarvis, they call him.
Well, authorities in Germany on Monday called off a 3-month search for an unpredictable fugitive deemed a threat to local residents. The fugitive, known as Yvonne, is a 6-year-old cow who made a last-minute escape on May 24th to avoid a trip to the slaughterhouse. She's been on the run ever since, first inspiring the wrath of law enforcement officials when she charged a police car in late July.
Seems like you can have that much wrath directed against somebody whose alternative is having that, like, pneumatic hammer between the eyes.
Yeah. The incident prompted authorities in Germany's Mühldorf district to issue a shoot-to-kill order for hunters if they saw the cow. However, thanks in part to an outpouring of public support, the order was permanently revoked on Monday. During the summer-long ordeal, Yvonne was not fooled by ploys to lure her into the arms of the law. She evaded thermal imaging cameras and search teams, seeking a $14,000 reward offered by a German tabloid. Yvonne also did not fall to bait that included an attractive ox, who had been dubbed the George Clooney of cattle. Her sister cow, Waltrod, who had been brought out, hoping she'd come see her sister cow, or her calf, Freezy. In fact, an animal psychic reported that Yvonne is over domestic life in general and said the cow just didn't feel ready to return to her old life.
Maybe Germans ought to quit sending things to slaughterhouses altogether, huh? How about we do that? Maybe just take like a century where you don't just build big buildings on the outside of town and just send things there in boxcars.
Reports are now surfacing from people still combing the Bavarian forest that during her months on the lam, Yvonne has become a hardened wild animal that now looks more like a buffalo than a cow.
Did you really just say that the cow was on the lam?
Yes, I did.
The cow was on the lam. The cow was on the lam.
Yes. This according to the German newspaper Der Spiegel.
Okay.
Should she decide to return to domestic life, Yvonne has been purchased by German wildlife charity Gut Eiderbeikel, which has offered her a place to live in peace.
Even their charities sound mean.
The charity sends a statement. Yvonne has truly fought for her freedom. She has shown the world that her urge to be free is strong, even for a cow.
We're a very caring charity called Der Liebenstauken. Okay, well, whatever. And am I to understand at one point that they did like a Bugs Bunny thing of dressing up another cow like in fishnets and heels and...
Pretty much, yeah. They brought out some like...
And hello, sailor. How are you today?
Some ox who they called the George Clooney of cows.
Oh, I see. So it was a male.
It was actually a male saying maybe she'll want to come talk to... Then no. How about her sister? Bring out her sister. No. How about her kids? Bring out her children. Mommy, please come home. And she's saying, I will have none of this.
And would you go for a free massage in the back room?
You're not bringing me in, coppers, she
said.
This
is a German story. They actually got the relative to try to, like, take part in luring her to her demise.
Exactly, yes.
They tried to get a relative to inform on the cow the authorities.
It's the day the cows cried.
Seriously. Sort of like a, wait. What's the cow's name?
Yvonne.
What's the sister's name?
Waltrod.
Waltrod?
Waltrod.
And that's a sister cow? Is that like being a sister wife,
probably,
I guess?
Valtroud or something like that. And like her calf say was Freezy.
Like a Waltroud's choice kind of a thing?
Yeah, I know.
I was trying to go some other way there. I couldn't figure out where to go.
Bovine's choice.
Jesus. Yeah. All right. Look, things will go easier for you if you tell us where your sister is. You may be allowed to live. God damn. Seriously, Germany just needs to be fenced off and just dealt with accordingly, I think.
Schnitzel's list.
Maybe. Something there.
No, okay.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, August 30th, and later on this hour, you get your entertainment news, also your science on the march. That is here at Cascadia.fm. Here's Don Taylor.
A Washington State fire chief says a man dumped gasoline on a beehive in a tree in retaliation for a bee sting, then ignited the hive, causing an explosion heard throughout his suburban neighborhood in Linden, Washington, just a few miles south of the Canadian border.
Please tell me he caught on fire.
No, sadly he did not.
Okay.
Otherwise, this would be a Darwin watch for later.
That's too bad.
Linden Chief Gary Barr told the Bellingham Herald that the Sunday night fire caused a large whoosh, singed a tree.
That's the scientific name.
And killed the bees, but no people were hurt. Barr says the man's friend had been stung earlier in the day. The fire chief says, and this is their quote, "The correct way to deal with this is to call a beekeeper."
Or, you know, just to acknowledge the fact that if you screw around with bees, they'll sting you.
Yeah.
Retaliating against the bees by lighting their hive on fire. It's hard to believe
that. Gasoline.
It's hard to believe that the bees are, they seem to be diminishing in numbers. We can't seem to find that many of them. We're treating them really well.
Firefighters explained that to the homeowner, that, dude, don't blow up the hives with gasoline. And the newspaper said that it doesn't appear that he will be cited for exploding the bees.
Doesn't it seem like that's a little bit of reckless endangerment, though?
It kind of does, but, you know, I guess if there was really nobody else around.
If the hive is in the tree, well, it just seems like you can't just be setting fires with gas willy-nilly.
No.
I mean, so you would think. I mean, here's the good news about this is that you know he's on some sort of bee Interpol list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter where he goes. He could be in Brazil, and the bees will be, you know, they'll be, you know, word will pass from one hive to the other, and he'll get his.
And not just the bees, the wasps.
Oh, yeah.
The wasps are out to get him now.
No, they're gonna sting him everywhere, including the pooper. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
When justice is served, It'll be everywhere, including in the pooper. That's what I'm...
All right.
The stinging. There.
Okay.
Remember to tell you the story about a wasp next hour.
Okay, I will...
We actually have two wasp-related stories.
Do what I can to remember that.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Polygamous leader Warren Jeffs has been hospitalized after not eating or drinking enough since he was sentenced to life in prison for child sexual assault crimes. The Associated Press reports that prison officials say Jeffs is in critical but stable condition. Meanwhile, the ABC News reports a source close to Jeffs claims the 55-year-old head of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints is in a coma and may not survive. According to the source, Jeffs became so weak after a three-day fast that prison doctors were forced to induce the coma. He, of course, was sentenced on the beginning of August for life in prison for sexually assaulting two underage followers that he took as child brides. The jury delivered him for less than 30 minutes before returning the maximum sentence on both counts. And And he's a horrible person and a creep, and it's kind of hard to feel sorry for the fact that he's in a coma.
Well, that's not true. I feel bad that he's in a coma because it is not his job to administer punishment. That is our job because
that's
he's
true.
A cretin. So I'm all for doing whatever it takes to wake him up and, you know.
Yeah. If he's unconscious, he's escaping retribution.
Yeah, no, I'm all for keeping him alive for a long, long time and keeping him in a small, small room filled with dripping water and cockroaches. And then a prison inmate who occasionally just fills his anus full of glass.
Or his pooper, as we sometimes
Don,
refer
don't
to
be
it
crude.
On this show.
Don't traffic in filth. Sicken me. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us later on this hour. Your entertainment news, that's about half an hour from now. And you can get this program later on via iTunes if that's your kick. That's the way you live your life. Here's Don Taylor.
2 days after more than 21,000 runners and walkers traveled from the mountain to the coast on Friday and Saturday, officials at the Hood to Coast Relay admit that the event may have been too big, what with 21,000 people. Organizers said they've been fielding lots of complaints about massive traffic tie-ups in the latter half of the race, and they promise that changes will be made next year. This year, the course was lengthened slightly, totaling 200 miles, the longest distance in course history. There were also 250 new teams added this year, adding another 3,000 participants onto the route. Jude Hubber, Hood to Coast spokesperson, said, "We went too high, so we're going to lower that back down." On the event's official Facebook page, complaints about the traffic were mixed with positive comments about volunteers and the race experience. Hubbard told said that race organizers will review all the feedback, including comments on the race's Facebook page, and will make changes to try to eliminate the problems last year. This year marked the event's 30th anniversary. A deer hunter who was able to stop his tumble down a cliff by catching a stump 40 feet from the bottom of a ravine has been rescued. Hillsborough firefighters say Jason Henry, 32, was following a deer trail on land owned by Longview Timber when he fell nearly 100 feet on Monday afternoon. He managed to stop his fall by grabbing onto a tree stump, Hillsborough firefighters say, and then squatted on the stump on the steep hillside. After his rescue, Henry said, "I was panicking. I got a family at home. Luckily, I had a cell phone that got a signal." He used his cell phone to call for help. He called 911. Talked to the dispatcher, explained his location, you know, about 100 feet down the cliff on a stump.
right over here.
And how he got there so deputies could find him. The man continuously told the dispatcher that he thought the stump was going to give way and he would fall down the vertical cliff.
I got a family at home. Look at the heart.
Unsure of his exact location, Henry used a whistle to help crews find him. It took deputies about an hour to reach him in the steep, dense forest. A Washington County deputy was the first to find him, aided by his extensive knowledge of the area. Authorities said Deputy Daniel Charter was able to find Henry after only hearing general descriptions of the landmarks. He thought, "Wait a minute, I know that stump."
So he's sort of the polar twin of the guy who did not have extensive knowledge of the area and who just fell down a hill onto a stump.
Right.
Okay.
So on the one hand, you've got Deputy Daniel Charter who said, "Wait a minute, I know that area, I know that cliff, I know that stump, I can find him right now." On the other hand, you've got Jason Henry, who was walking along a trail and fell off.
The deputy's sort of he's the Tonto of the story.
Yes. Henry said he wasn't injured after he was rescued, and he walked back to his pickup truck.
All right. I hope that he fell off something else on the way to the pickup truck. Hold on, let me just turn.
He tripped falling out of the truck.
Where are my cigarettes? Whoa! Into an endless chasm, into a bottomless ravine. Thank you for, and by the way, you note that at no point there did I do a deer hunter joke. Was gonna, and then I thought no.
And I did not use my usual "aye" sound effect that I use for people falling off of things.
Is that what that is? I thought you were being a Mexican.
No, that's when people are plummeting to their doom. They go "aye." That's what they do in comic books.
Okay.
A I E E E E.
Is that everyone, or just? I mean, is that white people too?
Yeah, everybody that, like, if they get thrown off a building by a superhero, or they just fall off of something, or they go tumbling to their doom, they go "aye."
It's not just if the Frito Bandito falls off.
No.
Something. Okay.
No, that would be ay 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 ay.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry, I should have known that. That's a thing I should have just sussed out on my own. Yeah, I know.
If they're like an old Jewish man and they get thrown off of them, they go ay 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 ay.
No,
that's what they do.
Stop it. Here's Don Taylor at the, news desk.
The Dow started the week off well, ending Monday's session up 254 points, but Manny Schifrin with Kiplinger's Personal Finance reports this bump could could be short-lived.
Let's see. This is, by the way, Manny sounds like a guy. I don't even know who he is. Sounds like a guy you can trust. This is Market One.
This market is so incredibly volatile and so unpredictable.
Dude.
There can just be a piece of bad news that comes out of Europe or one of America's banks, and you'll see these recent gains.
You can't really enunciate all that clearly.
Seriously, the hacky sack market is like in the toilet.
That nitrous is really powerful.
Schiffers explains how increased spending by Americans helped stocks rocket up 254 points.
You can't call it rocketing up. It fell like 7 million points over the last...
Woo!
That's like the guy who fell and landed on the stump, like if he were to adjust himself slightly, you know, and just sort of... move in place.
He rocketed back up 6 inches.
Doesn't really...
The Commerce Department reported better than expected consumer spending numbers for the month of July. Consumer spending rose 0.8%, and that's the highest figure in five months.
Okay, I take it back about Manny. This is just somebody's ignorant cousin who's been given a job.
Manny doesn't know. Manny was just like hitting a bong like 5 minutes ago, and now he's making stuff up.
He does seem like a real glue sniffer. All right.
He knows nothing. Okay.
Manny's dead to me.
Let's do our science news. It's already time for science, believe it or not.
You know, I didn't introduce him there. I didn't... never mind. Forget it. Let's see. Here's your science on the march for what is today? Tuesday? Yes. Brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is their phone number. Or you can go to facebook.com/SquiresElectric. Yes, that's what you can do. While you're there, you can see unsolicited testimonials from folks who've had Squires Electric come out to their home or business and deal with the wires or wiring therein. Whether it is the upgrading of that or the installing of that or the repairing of that or whether it's passing your next inspection, whatever you might need done, they can tell you up front about what it's going to cost. And you can feel good, A, about keeping your money, as they say, in the community, not to some extra Portland oligarchy. No, it's an oligarchy based right here in Portland. And then and then by dint of that, you are helping an oligarchy of tomorrow, the Emerson News Network. And really, so really, you're helping the world three different ways. It's 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Squires Electric. Here's Don Taylor.
Biofuels might be a way to make energy out of renewable resources and cut dependence on fossil fuels, but currently producing them from corn and other edible plants is largely impractical. Now, a group of researchers believe they have found a solution. Panda poop. The microbes in the feces of giant pandas break down super tough plant material in grass, corn stalks, and wood chips, according to researchers at the National Meeting and Exposition of the American Chemical Society in Denver. If the technique works on a large scale, inedible plants and plant waste could be used as biofuels instead of edible corn. Astrally Brown, a biochemist with Mississippi State University, said, "Who could have guessed that panda poop might help solve one of the major hurdles to producing biofuels, which is optimizing the breakdown of raw plant materials used to make the fuels?"
I myself would not have guessed that.
No. "We hope our research will help expand the use of biofuels in the future and help cut dependency on foreign oil." Brown and her colleagues spent a year collecting and analyzing panda feces at the Memphis Zoo. In the excrement, they found several types of digestive bacteria similar to bacteria found in termite guts. These bacteria help termites break down and digest wood. In pandas, they probably help with the digestion of woody bamboo shoots. Brown said, "Our studies suggest that bacteria species in the panda intestine may be more efficient at breaking down plant materials than termite bacteria and may do so in a way that is better for biofuel manufacturing purposes. Under certain conditions, panda poop bacteria can convert 95% of plant biomass into simple sugars. The powerful enzymes in the bacteria speed up chemical reactions, eliminating the need for high heat, harsh acids, and high pressures currently used to produce biofuels. Bacteria would also be more energy efficient in turning the materials such as switchgrass, corn stalks, and wood chips into fuel."
So this is one of those things where we're going to end up having like a human centipanda, right? Where it's like the panda is responsible for being some sort of de facto industrial intestine that just converts all of our fuel for
us. Just be stuffing bamboo shoots into its mouth. And then somebody on the other end will be going, "No! Oh!" Yes.
Okay.
Russia's space agency has postponed the launch of the new mission to the International Space Station following last week's accident in which a cargo craft was lost. Michael Soffardini, the ISS manager, says everyone involved would like to get back to normal operations as soon as possible.
Let's see. Space Station is the name of this cut, probably?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to turn everything else down. I can already sense those cuts from space are always so low. You think they could get their act together up there. Hold on a second. Let's make everything quieter and...
The focus of the entire program, and in particular our Russian colleagues, is to determine the cause of the anomaly and to resolve it and then get back to flying safely.
Anomalies in space seem like a bad idea, like a thing you don't want. Don Taylor.
That's right. Saffredini says those aboard the station are well stocked.
The crew on orbit is doing very well. We continue to press down the normal timeline.
On my space station, Hungry Man eats you!
No. No.
See, because it's food.
I know, and it's a Russian, but it, no.
It's like a TV dinner.
Yeah.
But see, if there's no food, then there's cannibalism.
Oh.
So instead of you eating the Hungry Man...
See, I was thinking it was a zombie scenario, and that confused me. No, it's cannibalism. That makes perfect sense.
No. It's like a Donner Party thing.
Okay.
Hungry Man. But there isn't, so then he...
Right.
And then it becomes a literal, not a figurative Hungry Man.
Right.
Eating you.
Yes.
In space.
On Monday, at the 242nd National Meeting and Exposition of the American Chemical Society in Denver, Colorado, the future face of space nuclear power was described. The first nuclear reactors to be landed on alien worlds to support human settlements will be suitcase-sized. James E. Werner, lead of the Department of Energy's Idaho National Laboratory, said people would never recognize the fission power system as a nuclear power reactor. The reactor itself may be about 1 foot wide by 2 feet high, about the size of a carry-on suitcase. There are no cooling towers. A fission power system is a compact, reliable, safe system that may be critical to the establishment of outposts or habitats on other planets. Fission power technology can be applied on Earth's moon, on Mars, or wherever NASA sees the need for continuous power. The joint NASA-DOE project is aiming to build a demonstration unit next year. This will be welcome news to Mars colonization advocates. To have a dependable power source on the Martian surface will be of paramount importance. The habitats will need to have a constant power supply simply to keep occupants alive. This will be a climate control on an unprecedented level.
So our first introduction to the rest of the galaxy is going to be that we're sending nuclear power facilities out there.
Yes, indeed.
That's great.
Fission reactors can provide water extraction, reclamation and recycling, food cultivation and storage, explosions,
lymphoma,
third limbs,
God damn.
Oxygen production and carbon dioxide scrubbing, lighting, hardware, tools and electronics, waste management. Because these systems will need to be powered from the moment humans set foot on the red planet, 24 hours and 39 minutes a day.
Well, the water supplies aren't going to poison themselves, Dawn. I mean, really.
That's right.
If we're going to start growing radioactive grass to feed to radioactive cows in space, we have to get on that now.
Damn right. We are never going to Mars, are we?
No.
Why do we keep saying we're going to Mars?
Because I don't know the answer to that, actually. But I know the answer to the first part, which is no, it's not going to happen.
When bombarded by noise pollution, some male birds begin to sing higher tunes, found a new study, and that tonal shift makes them less attractive to females. These findings suggest that birds must make difficult trade-offs in urban areas and places where traffic and industrial noises threaten to drown them out. Either they sing less appealing songs or tones in efforts to rise above the ambient noise, or they sing songs that make them sound appealing at the risk of not being heard at all. Walter Hofbrück, a behavioral ecologist at Leiden University in the Netherlands, said, "If females can hear all song types equally well, they will go for the sexy ones. But if they cannot hear the sexy ones well anymore, they might just go for the songs they can still hear. It could well be that noise pollution is interfering with reproduction decisions by female birds. Modern life has brought with it a rising hum of background noise, which tends to cluster within low frequencies that many animals use to communicate. In recent years, researchers have been documenting all sorts of ways that cars, boats, industrial machinery, and other noises have affected the behavior of many kinds of species, including birds. In his previous work on a bird called the Great Tit, Hofbrück found that exposing males to artificial traffic noise caused them to sing at higher frequencies. This made him wonder if these birds were managing to thrive by working around noise pollution. The other possibility was that shifting their songs was harming them in some way. So they started recording the songs of male of great tits on various days in their springtime mating ritual in the Netherlands, and the results showed that the males sang the lowest songs in their repertoires just before the females laid eggs.
This is like, you know, it's why the female birds always end up going for those guys that have the low rider cars.
Yeah.
You get the birds with the big subwoofers that you can hear miles away. There's no call for that except to impress girls.
It also explains, why like guys like Quincy Brown, Quincy Jones, do so well with the ladies. That deep voice.
You're the Barry White of the bird world.
The Barry White, the Quincy Jones. Yeah. the ladies like that. But if they can't be heard over like the motorcycles thing, their voices go up, and then they just sound like, you know, Adam Sandler, and they're not as attractive anymore.
It seems like we ought to be able to make better jokes. Right there. It seems like we should be funnier.
I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just trying to explain the whole concept to those who might not understand.
That's even more unfortunate.
I know. And finally, science has given ice cream a makeover, expanding the number of options for people with lactose intolerance who cannot digest most dairy products. Soy has long been an ingredient for alternative ice creams, but some claim it doesn't measure up in taste and mouthfeel. In an effort to create tasty non-dairy options, researchers at the Fraunhofer Institute for Process Engineering and Packaging in, yes, Germany, decided to experiment with a reed-like plant called the lupin. Protein sets lupin and soy plants apart, according to one German broadcasting company. Lupin seeds produce high-quality proteins comparable to milk, while soy lags behind and is unable to create the creaminess of true ice cream. As a result, researchers have lent the technology and recipe to one company to market a plant-based ice cream as Lupin-S, which is available in a handful of flavors, including chocolate, vanilla, cherry, and strawberry mousse, to European consumers at a few grocers.
Could they come up with something that doesn't sound like I'm eating a bucket full of disease?
Lupin-S.
Seriously, doesn't it? It sounds like some sort of a treatment you give people for muscle disorders.
Well, it costs about $4 per half liter, and Lupin ice cream provides more variety for the 60% of people around the world unable to digest lactose. Vegans could also find the dairy-free product appealing. And then there's a whole bunch of information about why some people can digest lactose and other people can't.
It seems like it's a lot less expensive just to man up and just eat ice cream. Seriously.
I cannot see by the side of the road or hear about lupins, however, without having like a Monty Python flashback and just hearing Dennis Moore saying, "Give me your lupins!" That's right there. So I hope we don't ever have lupin ice cream here, because I would never stop doing that.
No, probably not.
Because I'm a huge dork.
Okay. At the end of science?
Hell yeah.
All right, there you go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/SquiresElectric, or online, via the telephone at 503-252-1609. Coming up in about 10 minutes from now at around 12:45 Pacific time here on this Tuesday, you'll get your entertainment news. And then next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program, that is at RickEmersonShow.com, where you can be amused for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. Actually, really, you can hear us for 32 cents a day. Whether you're amused or not is largely up to you, and I would imagine the context in which you hear our material and your upbringing and social mores. But, you know, I can't really figure out a way to quantify the cost for that.
Yeah, it's not all Quincy Jones, Adam Sandler jokes. Some of it is actually genuinely amusing.
No. I mean, if I could figure out a way to charge you more depending on your background, I would. But that technology eludes us at the moment. Thomas is working on it, though. Here's Don Taylor.
Is there a way you could do that when they give us their credit card, it could just automatically do like a credit check? And if it turns out they have a lot of money, they get bumped up to like the premium standard?
No, I wasn't even talking about that. I was just thinking depending on their background, their lifestyle, how they were raised, perhaps their religious affiliation,
that.
we would get a metric of how likely they were to find the show moderately to very amusing, and then we would charge them more. We would prorate them in advance for how likely they were to find the show funny.
Oh, so, you know, they're literally getting their money's worth.
Yeah, so like if you're just some jagoff who's not going to, you know, who's going to cancel after a month, well, we might charge you more then, frankly. But I mean, all things being equal, if you weren't going to find the show that funny, we'd probably charge you 32 cents. If we knew, like, from the get-go that you were, like, 98% likely to find the show hilarious, we'd charge you, like, a buck a day.
Yeah, and you're going to stay, because obviously
the thing is,
you'd
pay
it hilarious.
Because the show, great.
Okay.
So, our scientists are working on that now.
A California man riding his bike didn't recognize a pedestrian who was walking in his neighborhood, so he pulled out a sword and threatened to cut him in half. Santa Clara police said they booked 52-year-old Richard Gonzalez into county jail on felony charges of assault with a deadly weapon and criminal threats after they received the rather unusual 911 call just after 2 a.m. on Saturday. When officers arrived in the residential area near City Hall in Santa Clara, a man told investigators a bicyclist had threatened him with a saber sword. The saber is known for its long curved blade and is used in fencing and during military ceremonies. As officers were interviewing the victim, who was not hurt, he told them Gonzalez had threatened to cut him in half. The officers quickly found Gonzalez, I guess looking for the guy who was riding around on a bike with a sword at 2 o'clock in the morning, recovered the sword and arrested him. Lieutenant Matt Hogan said, "The victim was simply walking down the street. The suspect made some threatening comment and armed himself with this rather large sword. The victim and Gonzalez did not know each other. Hogan said, it appears to be an unprovoked random act. We're very pleased the officers were there hurriedly and there were no injuries. Oddly enough, this is the second sword-wielding suspect that Santa Clara officers have arrested this year. In the first case, police arrested a different man for driving into a Lexus dealership and threatening an employee with a sword that he pulled out of his car.
It seems like maybe their neighborhood welcoming committee needs some work. They don't have it quite down.
Or maybe just put, please no swords on the welcome to Santa Clara sign when you enter the city.
And it sounds like it wasn't even a real sword. It was like a rapier or something. It was like one of the
saber.
Little... Yeah, but those aren't sharp, right? Those are the. That's the whole thing. You can't cut a guy with a.
Sure, you can. It's the
kind used for fencing, because fencing swords are dull.
I know. Well, it says they use sabers for fencing, but sabers.
Someone who wrote the story doesn't know what they're talking about. There's someone who just hurriedly consulted, not even Wikipedia, but just like SwordDude.com.
He was remembering like some Bugs Bunny cartoon where the guy was in Arabia, and that's what he was thinking a saber was.
Okay.
The Libyan people are in charge of their own future, according to State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland. But she says the country has the backing from the United States and others.
Well, because they're children. They can't be left alone,
The United States stands with the Libyan people as they continue their journey towards genuine democracy.
All right, then.
It should come with rim shots.
Nuland says the U.S. and other... We have one.
Do we? Wait,
yeah,
hold on.
Lisa.
Hold on.
The United States stands with the Libyan people as they continue their journey towards genuine democracy.
All right.
There we go.
Excellent.
Nuland also says the U.S. and others are keeping a close eye on the situation.
The days and weeks ahead will be critical for the Libyan people, and the United States and its partners will continue to move quickly and decisively to help the TNC and address the needs of the Libyan people.
Awesome. Excellent. Fantastic. Keep that handy.
Yes. So what started as a dream getaway with friends has turned to tragedy for a 48-year-old man who was found dead off of Fantome Island in Australia near Townsville yesterday.
Oh, it's too loud. I'm sorry. I was going to ask you if I should have the dramatic sting all primed, and then as I was priming it, I actually pressed it.
Well, yeah, actually, we might have one of those. The Melbourne man, known to his friends as Rooster...
Wait, that probably wasn't where I was supposed to play it.
Was killed after he encountered trouble while trying to retrieve a vessel which broke anchor off the island at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday night. The man's body, which had been mauled by tiger sharks.
Damn it. No, I keep doing it.
Was found near the island about 9 a.m. yesterday. It's not clear whether the man had drowned or if he was killed by the sharks. Fantome, part of the Great Palm Island Group, is 65 kilometers northeast of Townsville off the Queensland coast. The man was a builder. He was taking a break from work on Orpheus Island to spend time with three workmates who live on Palm Island. Emergency service officers launched a large-scale air and sea search after he failed to return to shore with the vessel Sunday night. They found the body, and it had been torn apart by sharks.
There you go. See, that was an appropriate use of the dramatic sting right there.
And being Australian, by the way, his friend described him...
As drunk.
Well, Rooster was such a lovable bloke who was always willing to put his hand up to help others, to put a smile on their face. It's hard to imagine how a day that started out so great would end up so tragic. Torn apart by sharks.
But we needed to lift the mood there.
Thank you. A Washington, D.C. police officer accused of drunkenly shooting at transgendered people has been punished at least twice before.
I'm sorry.
For alcohol-related incidents.
That just makes it sound like he's off shooting at flocks of geese. Except it's not flocks of geese, it's just...
He's just, yeah.
It's just...
Dude in a dress.
Guys in skirts. Yeah, just...
Charging documents released Monday.
Where would you find groups of transgendered people just randomly, though?
Well, he's in Washington, D.C. I mean, there must be areas where
they just congregate on corners, warming their hands over a barrel?
Well, like here in Portland, there's probably areas where you are more likely to see transgendered people. And then if you, like, I don't know, post yourself, if this guy posts himself on a balcony, like he's in, like, a deer hutch or whatever those are called.
Okay.
Looking for dudes in skirts. I don't know. Anyway, his name was Kenneth Furr, with two R's. He crashed his Cadillac into another vehicle early Friday morning, stood on the hood of the victim's vehicle, and shouted, "I'm going to kill all of you." There were five people in the other vehicle. One person suffered multiple gunshot wounds to the arm and hand, and two others were hurt in the attack. Furr, a 20-year veteran, blew a 0.15 on the alcohol breath test machine, nearly twice the legal limit for drivers in D.C.
Wait, so was everybody in the car transgendered? Is it like a Shriner's car full of, like, just packed full of... crossdressers?
I think so. Yeah, I think it was a car full of
on their way to a convention of some kind.
People.
Okay.
Or just out enjoying a lovely evening in Washington, D.C.
I'm just saying that seems to defy the law of averages.
Oh, here we go. What happened was Fur got into an argument with several transgendered people outside the CVS pharmacy at about 4:40 a.m. on Friday.
Okay.
He pulled a gun on one of the victims, who then reported the incident to an off-duty D.C. police officer who worked security at the pharmacy. So the CVS officer determined that Fur was an off-duty officer, and therefore no further action was necessary.
All right.
Because apparently if you're an off-duty officer...
You can just shoot at anybody.
And you just want to, like, brandish a weapon at transgendered people in front of a pharmacy...
That's a bonus.
That's fine. The victims later saw Fur driving his Cadillac and followed him in their car... There was their first
Well, okay, mistake. So that's, yeah, the guy brandishes a weapon and then drives away. That's nature doing you
right.
a favor.
Then when you're like, we're going after him, why would you do
that? The danger's receding. Let's follow it.
Yeah. Fur then got out of his vehicle, pointed the gun at the driver. The sequence of events that followed is unclear. Patrol officers nearby said they heard the cars crash and then rapid gunfire. They found him standing on the hood, pointing his off-duty service weapon at the windshield and, of course, screaming, I'll kill all of you. This wasn't the first time Furr's gotten into trouble. He was arrested in 2004 for driving while intoxicated and operating while impaired. He pleaded no contest, and the charges were dropped after he completed a diversion program. He was suspended for between 30 and 90 days in that case. Earlier in 1996, on Christmas Day, Furr and another officer were on duty when they got into a drunken argument with a mother and son. They were on duty and got into a drunk. So were they drunk? I guess so, because he was placed on administrative leave. And they tried to fire him, but he was reinstated in 98 after a change in police chiefs.
I've really lost track of what's happening in the story, except that this guy seems to be at the nexus of all bad things that happen everywhere in Washington, D.C.
I think really the message of the story is it's impossible to get fired as a cop in Washington, D.C.
Really? No matter what it is that you do.
Yeah.
They will.
If you get a job as a cop in Washington, D.C., you have that for life.
That is a gig for the rest of your life, yes.
What time is it?
It is 12:44,
Don
Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday, right here at Legion of News on Cascadia.fm.
Sebastian Bach was one of many to feel the wrath of Hurricane Irene. The former Skid Row singer lost his Red Bank, New Jersey house during Sunday's extreme weather. According to his Facebook page, which included photos of the destruction, I am numb, he said, in shock and devastated to report that my home of 21 years, my house featured on MTV Cribs, has been destroyed, condemned, and deemed uninhabitable due to the extreme flooding courtesy of Hurricane Irene.
Not that it, like, doesn't suck already because a guy's house where he lived for 20 years and he came back and it's just gone, but also he had a huge, huge collection of rock memorabilia, which was there, and that stuff is insured, but it's not... You know, it's not like the...
Including some Kiss items.
Well, no, yeah, he's a massive Kiss fan. And, and also stuff from his own career or whatever. And it's like you could insure that, but it's not like you can just then take the... Well, I was going to say, it's not like you can just take a check to Gene Simmons' house and have him give you new stuff. You probably could, frankly. But he had a huge collection of vintage posters and all of this stuff that was in this, and it's like fireproof or whatever, but that doesn't really help you when a massive wind of like 200 miles an hour comes through.
Well, and then flooding. I mean, the extreme flooding caused a nearby bridge to collapse, crashed into his garage, knocked the entire house off its foundation.
Yeah.
And apparently, he also had a lot of Skid Row master tapes.
Yeah, there's no Mylar that's going to protect you from a bridge coming through the front of your house.
So apparently he's just said, screw it, and he's moving to L.A.
Yeah.
Beyonce and Jay-Z won't be the only ones making a new generation of musically inclined babies. According to People magazine, Jason Castro, who appeared on the 7th season of American Idol and has since released his own solo album, welcomed a baby girl named Madeline Amelia Castro on Sunday. It's the first child for Castro and his wife, Mandy, who wed in January 2010. The singer-songwriter shared a picture of himself with his newborn from his Twitter page and called his bundle of joy Daddy's Girl. Daryl Hannah donned a familiar accessory outside the White House today, handcuffs, after she was arrested during an oil pipeline protest.
Why is that a familiar accessory for Daryl Hannah?
She's been arrested before. She does a lot of this activist stuff.
Not because she's like a whore.
No, she does that thing where they show up and the cops say, you can't be here. And they say, yes, we can. They say, we're going to arrest you. She said, go ahead and do it, copper. And then you get arrested and then you're in jail for like a day and then you get back out.
Doesn't the story make it sound like it's just because she's a slut?
It kind of does, yeah.
Okay, I mean, that's clearly, whoever wrote this little tease there is hoping that we go, ha ha, because she's,
So she was with a bunch of other people who were protesting, apparently, the use of fossil fuels or something. and the oil pipelines. And so they sat on the sidewalk in front of the White House.
But this isn't really arrested. This is like Martin Sheen arrested.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Martin Sheen arrested. She was also arrested when she stopped traffic in West Virginia in 2009.
By being a whore.
No, she was protesting mining practices.
Oh, when do we get to the story where she's a whore?
I don't think there is a story about Daryl Hannah being a whore.
Fine. You know, that's just slapdash journalism.
I wish there was. I wish there was.
Somebody is falling asleep at the switch.
The actor who played Random Task in Austin Powers, the top job guy who threw the shoe, has been convicted of torturing a 20-year-old woman back in 1990. Joseph Hung Min Sun was arrested in 2008 on suspicion of participating in a gang rape of a woman on Christmas Eve when DNA linked him to the crime. According to prosecutors, Sun and another man abducted the woman, dragged her into the back of a car, pistol whipped her, and threatened to shoot her. The victim claims Sun and the other man repeatedly raped her and sexually penetrated her with a gun before releasing her in Compton naked. Sun is back due in court on September 19th for sentencing and faces a maximum of 15 years to life in prison.
Please tell me this is not the final story in the so-called entertainment news.
No, it's not. We have more. I threw that in the middle so we could do like the happier news.
Okay.
Like, for example, the new cast of Dancing with the Stars has been revealed. Guess who's on Dancing with the Stars this year?
Nancy Grace.
Yes, Nancy Grace. And basketball star Ron Artest, World Cup soccer player Hope Solo, Robert Kardashian, Kristen Cavallari, and Chaz Bono.
That's who the other person I couldn't think of.
Yeah, Chaz Bono. Yes. TV personalities Nancy Grace, Carson Kressley, and Ricky Lake.
Carson Kressley of Queer Eye?
Queer Eye from The Straight Guy, yeah. Singer-actress Chyna Phillips. Actors David Arquette.
Wait, hold on. You're going too fast. You're just blowing my mind here. Chyna Phillips. Which one is she? Is she the talentless one or the fat one?
No.
Which one is she?
She's the talentless one.
Wait, hold on.
She was the pretty blonde one that nobody ever cared
she's
about.
She's the kind of Marky Post looking chick.
Yeah, that's her.
Okay, all right. Yeah, because there's that was the only three. And I know that this is wrong, and it's also just because I was like 15. But that's how every guy was like, is she the blonde one, the hot one, or the fat one? And that's the only way you could ever tell the girls apart in Wilson Phillips. So she is John and Michelle Phillips' daughter.
Yes.
Okay, all right. So, she hasn't been doing anything. She's been sitting around, I think, waiting for Carney and Wendy to call, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah, every single season, the whole Dancing with the Stars, they should just start putting quotation marks around stars.
Trending downward.
David Arquette is going to be on, which I think this is the thing, though. David Arquette and Chaz Bono are the two that make me want to watch it. And yet, every time there's somebody on the show, like Adam Carolla or Penn Jillette, that I actually like go, ooh, I'm going to watch this because this will be entertaining. They're terrible, and they just lose like immediately, and then I don't watch the rest of the season because I don't care.
Yeah.
So this will be so I can tell you right now the first two to go based on my track record will be Chaz Bono and David Arquette because they're the only two I care about.
So you can actually make people lose by caring about them.
Yes, right. Indeed.
Like reverse Midas touch
on TV as in life. Also, Italian actress Elisabetta Carnalis, who is better known as being George Clooney's ex-girlfriend. You know, the one he was with for years until she told a reporter,
I would like to get married someday.
I'd like to get married someday. And he went, yoink, and then she was gone.
He just pressed a button that said evict.
Ryan O'Neal was set to join the cast, but he's not yet fully recovered from recent knee replacement surgery, which I might or might not be code for something else.
Liver replacement.
American string quartet Kronos Quartet and rocker Patti Smith have received the prestigious 2011 Polar Music Prize from Sweden's King Carl the 16th Gustav. The musicians accepted their awards at a glitzy ceremony in Stockholm on Tuesday. Each award is worth 1 million kroner, which is $159,000. Smith said she was humbled and inspired to receive the award. She thanked her family and band members and appealed to the audience to turn their hearts and minds and resources toward the famine in Africa. The Polar Music Prize is typically shared each year by a pop artist and a classical musician. It was founded by the manager of Sweden's legendary pop group ABBA, Stig Andersson, in 1989. Previous laureates have included Pink Floyd, Joni Mitchell, Bjork, and Sir Paul McCartney. And finally, for your entertainment news, George Clooney has had to drop out of Steven Soderbergh's upcoming Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie.
I didn't even know there was a Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie yet.
Yes, in other news, there's a Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie.
Okay, can you tell me what U.N.C.L.E. stands for?
Oh, God, I used to know this. No, I can't remember.
But I don't think I can either, actually.
No. Clooney's dropping out because back when he was making Syriana, he hurt his back and he suffered an actual brain injury. because he was so severely underweight and he was doing all of his own stuff in like torture scenes. And so he hurt himself really, really badly. And apparently those old injuries have never entirely healed. And he's found that apparently he just can't do the action and the stunt scenes for The Man from U.N.C.L.E. A source close to the film says, in fact, I think he's planning on having another operation during the time he would have been filming.
By the way, in case you were wondering, U.N.C.L.E. stands for United Network Command for Law and Enforcement.
Ah.
What a weird name for a show. I mean, I know it was the 60s and there was no choice. You had to watch whatever was on because you only got like one channel. But what a bizarre name for a show.
And then there was the girl from U.N.C.L.E.
Was there?
Yes, starring Stephanie Powers.
I don't remember that at all. Stephanie Powers? Really?
Yeah.
Why am I not aware of that?
I don't know.
I got nothing.
And then I guess if we have time, I can read this.
We got 5 minutes.
Okay, then we will talk about this. Plans are in the works for a new Chicago Playboy Club, just blocks away from where the original opened 51 years ago. Playboy Enterprises has signed a licensing deal for a Playboy Club on the near north side of Chicago. The licensee, Boston-based real estate capital advisory firm Tremont Realty Capital LLC, is eyeing a mansion at 1150 North Dearborn Street, which is now the site of a restaurant. Playboy CEO Scott Flanders confirms the company has a deal for a Chicago club with a partner in the final stages of selecting a site. Playboy is resurrecting the clubs through licensees some two decades after closing down the last of its company-owned clubs. Since 2006, clubs have opened in Las Vegas, London, Macau, and Cancun, Mexico. Each is attached to a hotel or casino that attracts a steady stream of potential customers. The Chicago location, however, would stand alone, making it a tougher test of the viability of the 1960s-era concept today. Success would bolster the licensing business that Playboy executives are counting on as a growth engine for their struggling company.
So this is not just as a tie-in for the TV show. This is a thing that they've been doing already, opening.
And since 2006, they've all been attached to big hotels and casinos. But this one, they've actually decided to. And it's really a beautiful, beautiful site. It's a great big, like, four-story mansion. And it's a beautiful, beautiful building. And they're talking about it. They're going to turn it into a big multi-story, actual, honest-to-God Playboy club.
And it's where it's going to be?
Chicago.
Okay.
The Las Vegas location ranks 30th among the nation's top independent clubs. It has an estimated $10 million to $15 million annual revenue, which is sort of paltry, apparently, compared to a lot of other Las Vegas sites. Some of them, like Tao, apparently, in Las Vegas, grosses $70 million a year.
Jesus.
So the Rocky Wirtz, chairman of Wirtz Beverage Group, said, to be relevant today, you have to attract that 21 to 30-year-old patron. Is that going to be relevant to somebody that doesn't know what the Playboy Club is or has never even seen a Playboy magazine today? So they said in Las Vegas, you know, is the Playboy Club in Las Vegas attracting that 25-year-old person? I don't think so.
Well, that being said, now, granted, Sarah is no longer the 25-year-old person, but Sarah's not that much. I mean, Sarah just turned 30, and she and her friends actually all made a point of that was their destination the last time they went to Vegas, was to go to the Playboy Club. That they have that vintage Playboy Club that the Maloof brothers run in Vegas, and that was actually the focal point. That was like the only thing that they really had set aside that they had to do while they were there.
I went to the Playboy Club in Los Angeles once. I had a friend who, weirdly enough, was a key holder, and his wife was out of town, and he got drunk and said, "Let's all go to the Playboy Club."
I think you misunderstood what he meant when he said he was a key holder.
Yeah, but it was interesting. It was really fascinating. I thought I didn't know what it was going to be like. I was worried it might be a little on the skeezy side or that I'd be uncomfortable.
No, the Playboy Club was, if it's anything like it was, if the recreations are anything like they were in the 60s, it was actually really, really cool.
Yeah, the one, because this was Los Angeles, so this would have been the 80s. I guess it was only a few years before it closed.
Before they closed it down.
Yeah, but it was really a very, very nice club.
Well, it was like a jazz
mostly,
club.
And really, really terrific entertainment.
Yeah.
The bunnies were like beautiful, beautiful, lovely women and just excellent at their jobs. I mean, it was a really interesting experience.
Yeah, well, the whole thing about Playboy is, and this I think it's lost a little bit every time you see Hefner on, you know, on TV at the age of like 80 in his bathroom or whatever. But the whole thing about Playboy was that Playboy was tasteful as opposed to tacky. That was like his whole thing about because it's not like there weren't girly magazines before Playboy. I mean, there were magazines called like Stag and, you know, Dude and whatever. And there were all kinds of, you know, there had always been sort of cheesecake magazines. But Hefner's whole thing was to make it sophisticated. And the Playboy clubs were kind of his external embodiment of that. And they were modeled on Depression era jazz clubs. And they had that whole thing of like the at the Playboy Club tonight. And it was like guests, you know, who were, you know, they weren't customers. They were guests who were there. And they had that like the key that let you sort of, you know, that you had to use to check in at the front. And even I think up until they closed, they were getting like really top shelf entertainment. I mean, because it was still a marquee, it was a prestige gig to perform at the Playboy Club. So, and I had something I was going to say, and now it's gone.
Okay.
Wait.
Are we?
Yeah.
No. There's nothing.
Except that Ben Elton at one point created a BBC spy spoof called The Man from Auntie. Or Auntie, which was based on a Mad Magazine parody article of the same name from like 65. And it was like, you know, the association of unbelievably nauseating and terrible idiotic entertainment or something. Don't you think there should be like a Dancing with the Star Wars? And then it would be, you know, be like Boba Fett and that little thing that perches on Jabba's shoulder and goes, ah! And they would be dancing.
Ewoks.
Yeah. Well, maybe not.
They wouldn't be able to, like, you know, samba.
Ewoks would be the seat fillers at Dancing with Star Wars. All right, somebody get on that right now. And we're done. Thank you. With that, we bring the curtain down on this. Another exciting episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program can be heard at rickemersonshow.com. And we'll see you again tomorrow here at Cascadia.fm. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Hagler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. And don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes if you like, or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. We will see you again tomorrow. That is Wednesday at noon. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Tuesday. Won't you?